believer again. She might have to see my friends. I know. Let's see what it means when she says.
Yeah. WRCT Pittsburgh, the last bastion of pulchritude.
Welcome, everybody. Hope everybody had a good weekend. Much to discuss, so let's get right into it. We have now a more public battle, essentially, between the most centrist, or some would call it right-wing, wing of the Democratic Party, meaning Joe Manchin from West Virginia, and Bernie Sanders, more the left wing of the Democratic Party. And Bernie has basically had it up to here with Joe Manchin and wrote an op-ed, not just anywhere mentioning Joe Manchin, but actually wrote it in a local paper to Joe Manchin in West Virginia, which we're going to look at. Written in the Charleston Gazette Mail, Bernie wrote an op-ed saying, let's stand together to protect working families. We're going to look at the op-ed and we're going to look at Joe Manchin's response. Manchin very, very triggered that Bernie is doing this. So let's get right into it. Bernie writing, in America today, the very rich are becoming richer while millions of working families are struggling to put food on the table or pay their bills. We now have the absurd situation in which two multi-billionaires own more wealth than the bottom 40% of Americans. Going on to say, the $3.5 trillion Build Back Better bill, supported by President Biden and almost all Dems in Congress, is an unprecedented effort to finally address the long neglected crises facing working families and demand that the wealthiest people and largest corporations in the country start paying their fair share of taxes. In fact, this legislation would be paid for by ending loopholes and raising taxes on the 1% and large profitable corporations. The bill would take on the greed of the pharmaceutical industry. Last year alone, while one out of four Americans could not afford to fill prescriptions, six pharmaceutical companies made nearly $50 billion in profits, and the 10 highest paid executives made over $500 million in compensation. Bernie extols the virtues of what's proposed. The bill would expand Medicare. The United States and states like West Virginia and Vermont in particular are seeing populations age, meaning more older Americans and people with disabilities needing home health care. The Build Back Better plan is not only vitally important for seniors, but is enormously important for working families and children. As a result of the $300 direct payments to working class parents, which started with the American Rescue Plan, we've cut childhood poverty in our country by half. It would be unconscionable to see those payments end, which is what will happen if we don't pass the bill. And Bernie going on, explaining all of the great things that the bill actually does. It makes investment in housing. We would reduce homelessness. And then it would, to some degree, deal with climate change. It would create jobs. And Bernie says this is being opposed by every Republican in Congress, as well as drug companies, insurance companies, the fossil fuel industry and the billionaires. They want to keep the status quo. And Bernie says it's now time to do this. And then he says there's overwhelming support for the legislation, which there is. And yet, writes Bernie, the political problem we face is that in a 50-50 Senate, we need every Democratic senator to vote yes. We now only have 48. Two Democratic senators remain in opposition, including Senator Joe Manchin, a Democrat of West Virginia. This is directly and accurately calling out Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, although this was in a West Virginia paper. This is focused on Manchin, for his unwillingness to just do the right thing for his own constituents, which I will remind you about with some statistics in a moment. Joe Manchin is not pleased that Bernie did this. Joe Manchin has responded in typical Joe Manchinese, saying this isn't the first time an out-of-stater has tried to tell West Virginians what's best for them, despite having no relationship to our state. I would argue, by virtue of understanding the dynamics of Vermont, that Bernie Sanders actually far better understands the situation for West Virginians than does Joe Manchin. But understand that this is not substantive. This is Joe Manchin saying, get off my lawn, Bernie. G- Get off any lawn in West Virginia. Manchin writes, millions of jobs are open, which is ignores the fact that, wait, well, hold on. What jobs? What do they pay? What are the conditions? Supply chains are strained and unavoidable inflation. Taxes are draining workers' hard-earned wages as the price of gas and groceries goes up. Sounds like a Republican. Senator Sanders' answer is throw money on an overheated economy, while 52 other senators have concerns. To be clear, Congress should proceed with caution on any additional spending. I will not vote for a reckless expansion of government programs. What do I think this is fundamentally about? Joe Manchin spent months saying the problem is the price tag is too big for these infrastructure bills. And then Democrats came to the table and said, OK, we can lower the price tag. We could reduce this and then we'll fix that problem. Right, Joe? And then Joe says, well, no, because a lot of the stuff that's in here aren't things we should be spending money on. Like, for example, the climate crisis. At this point, is it just about Joe Manchin's personal financial interests? Like, is it that simple? Joe Manchin gets $500,000 a year. Thanks to records obtained by Alex Koch for the Center for Media and Democracy and published by The Guardian, Manchin makes roughly $500,000 a year in dividends from millions of dollars in coal company stock that he owns. The stock is held in EnerSystems. That's a company Manchin started in 1988 and later gave to his son to run. Joe Manchin received a ton of money from fossil fuel lobbyist groups and donors who usually donate to Republicans, but seem willing to donate to Joe Manchin because of his position on these issues. So I don't want to be reductionist and say it's just his pocket. Maybe it is. Maybe it is. And maybe that's why Joe Manchin is taking these positions. As I've said before, West Virginia is a disaster and needs help, not an attack on the people. West Virginia, just look at the data, is a disaster. Terrible unemployment rate, terrible health care. West Virginia is ranked 47th out of 50th in the country in health care. That means access, quality and public health. Terrible on education. West Virginia is ranked 45th out of 50 in terms of education. That includes higher ed and pre-K through 12. As far as infrastructure is concerned, West Virginia is dead last, 50th based on energy, internet access and transportation. West Virginia, like few places in this country, desperately needs this bill, and they've got Joe Manchin. Now, if they had a Republican, I know, guys, if it was a Republican instead of Joe Manchin in the Senate, he's not voting. He or she is not voting for it anyway. But this is a state that desperately needs this. And now Bernie taking it directly to Joe Manchin, and Joe Manchin doesn't like it. Will it change what Manchin ultimately does? I don't know. We'll talk more about that tomorrow and what's currently on the table. Colin Powell, former Secretary of State, has died of COVID complications. This story is creating sort of an intersection of historical revisionism when it comes to Colin Powell and his role in foreign policy when he was Secretary of State. This is causing anti-vaxxers to come out of the woodwork and say Powell was vaccinated and he died, meaning the vaccine doesn't work. Why bother and get the vaccine? And it is coming at a time where we are really wondering what is the future of this pandemic. So let's talk a little bit about one article on this, and then we're going to look at some clips. CNN writing, Colin Powell, military leader, first Black U.S. Secretary of State, dies after complications from COVID-19. His family announced this on Facebook. He was 84. General Colin Powell, former U.S. Secretary of State and chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, passed away this morning due to complications from COVID-19. The family wrote on Facebook, noting he was fully vaccinated. We have lost a remarkable and loving husband, father and a great American. George W. Bush said in a statement today, Powell was a great public servant who was such a favorite of presidents that he earned the Presidential Medal of Freedom twice. Highly respected home and abroad, a family man and a friend. Though Powell never mounted a White House bid, he was sworn in as Bush's Secretary of State in 2001. He became the highest ranking Black public official to date in the country, standing fourth in the presidential line of succession. So this is, it would, I won't lie and say this is not a controversial figure in some sense. Colin Powell, still haunted by Iraq and his participation in making that bogus false case with nonsense intelligence for going into Iraq in 2003. That's probably the worst of Colin Powell's legacy. The good is that Colin Powell did not get pulled in by the Trump cult, and even prior to that, did not get pulled in by the right-wing xenophobia racism cult when it came to President Barack Obama. So let's look at what was maybe one of Colin Powell's best moments, saying, hey, guys, it's not just about whether Barack Obama is a Muslim because it's being used as a slur, but it's also if he were, then so what? This is maybe Powell's best moment.
I'm also troubled by not what Senator McCain says, but what members of the party say. And it is permitted to be said such things as, well, you know that Mr. Obama is a Muslim. Well, the correct answer is he is not a Muslim. He's a Christian. He's always been a Christian. But the really right answer is, what if he is? Is there something wrong with being a Muslim in this country? The answer is no, that's not America. Is there something wrong with some seven-year-old Muslim American kid believing that he or she could be president? Yet I have heard senior members of my own party drop this suggestion. He's a Muslim and he might be associated with terrorists. This is not the way we should be doing it.
So that's maybe Colin Powell's best. Now, Colin Powell's maybe worst was participating in making that case for war in Iraq based on intelligence. It seems pretty clear they knew to be faulty. Take a listen.
My colleagues, every statement I make today is backed up by sources, solid sources. These are not assertions. What we're giving you are facts and conclusions based on solid intelligence. I will cite some examples, and these are from human sources. Orders were issued to Iraq security organizations, as well as to Saddam Hussein's own office, to hide all correspondence with the Organization of Military Industrialization. This is the organization.
And the rest, as they say, is history. And that was a big factor in making the case for going into Iraq, one of the greatest foreign policy blunders of recent decades. So a complex figure. And of course, we wish his family nothing but the condolences and thoughts that we would when someone has lost a loved one, but a politically complex guy. Now, in terms of the vaccination, there are people who are going to say this and they're going to say, see, why get vaccinated? Colin Powell was fully vaccinated and he still died from complications from COVID. Remember, Colin Powell was 84 years old, a very, very high risk group. As we know, no vaccine is 100%. And we have seen a very small number proportionally, but we have seen some so-called breakthrough deaths. What we should be saying in reaction to this is, wow, it is way more common to die when you're not vaccinated at any age. I should get vaccinated. You look at public hospitalization data. We just got some recent data from the UK, which is why I mention it. 84% of hospitalizations in the UK were unvaccinated. Only half of 1% of COVID deaths in the UK were fully vaccinated. And so while this does happen statistically, and it just so happens that Colin Powell is now one of those in that group, you are overwhelmingly protected from hospitalization and from death if you get vaccinated. So the message should be, wow, it's newsworthy because it is so rare statistically that fully vaccinated people die. This really reinforces the importance of the vaccine. So that's the mathematically accurate takeaway that we should get from this particular situation. Send me your thoughts. You can find me on Twitter at DPacman. Tomorrow is the live viewer town hall. Tomorrow, Tuesday, October 19th at 6 p.m. Eastern, we will be doing a wide open phone lines town hall. It will stream live on the new YouTube channel, Pacman Live. If you look for it on Twitch, if you look for it on the main YouTube channel, you won't see it. It is only on the new YouTube channel, Pacman Live, 6 p.m. Eastern tomorrow. I hope that you will join me. Our program does depend on the support of our members, viewers, listeners, radio audience, podcast listeners, whoever you are. You can sign up at joinpacman.com. Support the program. Get all the great member benefits that come with it, including the daily bonus show. Sign up at joinpacman.com. This is just absolutely bonkers, off the wall. And it's really instructive in terms of this idea of neutrality versus objectivity that I've been talking about for years at this point. There is a Texas school official that has been caught on an audio recording saying that when teachers teach about the Holocaust, there should also be opposing views. What does that mean? It's not clear, but it sounds pretty horrible. We have the audio. First, let me just kind of get you up to speed with what this is about. NPR reporting, in one Texas district, teachers were told to give opposing views of the Holocaust. What? A Texas school district is, again, the center of controversy after an administrator reportedly instructed teachers to provide students with opposing views of the Holocaust. Gina Petty, the executive director of curriculum and instruction for the Carroll Independent School District in Southlake, Texas, is alleged to have made the comments during last Friday's meeting, according to NBC News, which has audio. Let's just go right to the audio. Why not? This is Gina Petty seeming to say we need opposing views about the Holocaust.
Make sure that if you have a book on the Holocaust, that you have one that has opposing
How do you oppose the Holocaust?
Gina Petty did not respond to messages requesting comment. I met with two concerned teachers.
Yeah. Opposing views, guys. Opposing views about the Holocaust. Now, this is a great opportunity to again say neutrality and objectivity are two different things. There are many individuals who profess neutrality when neutrality is not at all objective. This is an issue on climate. This is an issue in many areas of life and of discussion. When we're being objective, we're honestly seeking the truth, whatever the truth turns out to be, no matter how it might differ from my preconceived notions or my biases going in. That's objectivity. We just want the truth, and we're not going to kneecap, hamstring, or limit our search for the truth on the basis of our personal biases. Neutrality is about a preconceived balance or agnosticism between different positions where the truth doesn't actually matter. Notice that neutrality has nothing to do with truth. It's just this idea where you're pre-committing to being indifferent or neutral or agnostic between different conclusions or ideas. So when we apply it to the Holocaust, what's an opposing view to the Holocaust? Like, we should include not only real history books about the Holocaust, but also like Nazi books about how Nazis felt about Jews. Like, we should include the explanation of Nazis as to why the Jews deserve to die. And students can determine, was the Holocaust good or was the Holocaust bad? Like, is that what we're talking about? Or we should give a perspective as to why Hitler's goals were noble, worthy, and good goals. Like, what does it actually mean to have an opposing view of the Holocaust? We need the often misunderstood perspective of the Nazis really needs to be explained to kids. And of course, that's part of what we teach. Most serious Holocaust studies, and you know what's going on in Texas, I don't know, but I would hope that it also is the case, would include the views of the Nazis and why the Nazis believed that the Jews had to die, as well as those who have medical issues. And, you know, we could go on and give the whole list. That's part of the actual books that should be used. So this is absolutely insane. As is mentioned in the NPR article, Gina Petty is the name of the woman allegedly on the recording there. She was asked for comment, and so far has not delivered any comment. But the right question is the one that you hear on the audio there. How do you oppose the Holocaust? To which Petty responded, believe me, that's come up. Now, the school district head has apologized and said there are not two sides of the Holocaust. That's Lane Ledbetter, who put out a statement saying, as the superintendent of schools, I express my sincere apology regarding the online article and news story released today. During the conversations with teachers during last week's meeting, the comments made were in no way to convey that the Holocaust was anything less than a terrible event in history. Additionally, we recognize there are not two sides to the Holocaust. As we continue to work through implementation of HB 3979, we also understand this bill does not require an opposing view on historical facts. As a district, we will work to add clarity to our expectation for teachers, apologize for hurt or confusion that this has caused. Now, here's the thing. That they may be accurately saying we're not talking about two sides on the Holocaust, but this House Bill 3979, as Karen Fitzgerald, a spokesperson, said for the district, teachers across the state are put in a precarious position by this bill. Our purpose is to support our teachers in ensuring they will have all of the professional development resources and materials needed. Our district has not and will not mandate books be removed, nor will we mandate that classroom libraries be unavailable. But it still does put teachers in a precarious position where they have to ultimately say there is no controversy to teach here. Whereas in other areas, like on climate change, the entire point of these bills is to claim there is a controversy and that it must be that the science of climate has to also be opposed by something else. And of course, that's very different, different situation. So while I guess they're apologizing for saying we need opposing views on Holocaust studies, this is a very problematic bill. And we've continued to see these problematic bills come out of Texas. We'll see ultimately where this lands. Tucker Carlson has now gone fully homophobic on Pete Buttigieg, or Buttigieg, as some like to say. Pete Buttigieg, rather, has taken paternity leave. He and his husband have adopted twins. And Tucker Carlson going in on what is he doing? Breastfeeding, huh? Is that why he's taking time off? He's taking time off to learn how to breastfeed? Tucker Carlson mocks Pete Buttigieg's paternity leave as learning how to breastfeed. Fox News host Tucker Carlson mocked Pete Buttigieg for taking paternity leave. Carlson equated Buttigieg, who is gay, taking paternity leave to learning how to breastfeed. Fox News hosts such as Jesse Waters previously bragged about the network offering paternity leave. Let's take a look at the video clip. Here is the homophobic attack on Pete Buttigieg, kind of mixed into some pseudo-political stuff.
But still, the White House does not seem concerned. Pete Buttigieg has been on leave.
By the way, Buttigieg.
His job since August after adopting a child, paternity leave, they call it, trying to figure out how to breastfeed. No word on how that went. But now he's back in office as the transportation secretary, and he's deeply amused, he says.
Yeah. It's funny how the supposedly manly right wingers who are alpha and they support the troops and they support being tough and America being tough and being tough at the individual level, they have as a hero Tucker, who never served anywhere, making fun of Pete Buttigieg, who's a veteran, because he's taking care of his kids, and mocking him in a homophobic way. Now, let me address one other element of this. I got a few messages from people and saw a ton of comments online saying stupid liberals saying this is homophobic. This isn't homophobic at all. It might be stupid, but it's not homophobic. Now, I hesitate to even, you know, sometimes when people ask for explanations for certain things, it's like if you're asking for an explanation, you're not going to understand it. You're not going to see it. I don't know that I can make you see it, but let me try. Homophobia often seeks to feminize men. Breastfeeding is something that biological women do. And Pete Buttigieg is gay. It's a very, very simple feminization of a gay man. That's all it is. And now that he's a father, is he breastfeeding? Is that what's going on? It's a very simple, lowbrow bigotry. That's all it is. And Tucker Carlson's audience absolutely loves it. Now, Pete Buttigieg was asked about this a couple of times, you know, whether Pete needs to respond or not, sort of up to Pete Buttigieg. But he said, I'm not going to be apologizing to Tucker Carlson. Says, as you might imagine, we're bottle feeding and doing it at all hours of the day and night. And I'm not going to apologize to Tucker Carlson or anyone else for taking care of my premature newborn infant twins. The work that we are doing is joyful, fulfilling, wonderful work. It's important work. It's work that every American ought to be able to do when they welcome a new child into their family. I campaigned on that and pointing out also that paid paternity and maternity leave in the United States, far more rare than it is in many other wealthy countries. So it's, it's sort of similar to the vaccine stuff with Tucker. My assumption is he's been fully vaccinated for a long time. He was first in line, but he's taking the preconceived notions and biases of his audience and the ignorance of his audience to monetize opposition to vaccination requirements and putting out stuff like the vaccines may have killed tens of thousands of people, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think it's really what Tucker believes, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because the impact on his audience and on the country is the same whether Tucker really believes it or not. I don't know, nor do I care whether Tucker is really homophobic or really has a problem with paternity leave. He is weaponizing it and monetizing it because his audience absolutely loves the thinly veiled homophobia. And that's fundamentally what this is all about. And everybody at Fox News seems to love it in terms of what it does for their ratings. At the same time, Fox has paternity leave. We know Jesse Waters took it. And much like Fox behind the scenes has one of the strictest vaccine mandates of any large corporation. Yes. What happens on air and what happens behind the scenes are two very different things. We'll have more on this on our Instagram. Make sure you're following us on Instagram at David Pakman Show. And you can follow me on Instagram as well at David.Pakman. So we're getting closer and closer really to the start of the 2022 midterms. And one of the signals that will be important in 2022 about 2024, if we're continuing to wonder as we are about the future of Trumpism as something that has the Republican Party in a vice grips, for lack of a better term, is how people that are aligned with Trump do in 2022 versus people who are not aligned with Trump do in 2022. And we have, to that end, a very, very interesting new report from Bloomberg, which looked at fundraising for various Republicans that have not been in the pro-Trump wing. Let's take a look at this and see if we can learn anything from it. Trump's picks lag Cheney and Republican incumbents in fundraising. Cheney, of course, being Liz Cheney. Cheney, Upton and Herrera Butler voted to impeach Donald Trump. Trump PAC hasn't donated to their opponents. Three House Republicans targeted by former President Donald Trump raised more money in the third quarter than his handpicked candidates to defeat them, according to the FEC filings. Representatives Liz Cheney of Wyoming, Fred Upton of Michigan, and Jamie Herrera Butler of Washington were among 10 House Republicans who infuriated Trump by voting against him during his second impeachment proceeding. So far, Republican donors haven't followed him in backing their challenger. So, already two important bits of news here. Number one, voting to impeach Trump in that second impeachment trial, despite what Trump and other Trumpists said, doesn't seem to have been a death blow to those individuals, at least so far. They're raising more money. And number two, an endorsement from Trump, in these particular cases at least, isn't actually helping the opponents to these individuals raise more money. Now, we've still got a while, right? These are primary races. We've still got a while. We'll see what happens. But so far, both of the claims, you're going down if you voted to impeach me, doesn't seem like it. And number two, my endorsement is going to rocket people to the winner's circle. Not actually happening so far. Let's continue. Trump has yet to endorse candidates running against the other six Republican incumbents who voted to impeach him on a charge of inciting the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol, but has vowed to fight them as worried Republican officials. Republicans need to flip only a handful of seats to gain control of the House in 22, and weakening incumbents seeking re-election by funding primary challenges would complicate that task. Another Republican who voted for impeachment, Representative Anthony Gonzalez, said in September that he wouldn't seek re-election. His Trump-endorsed challenger, Max Miller, took in $695,000, including $500,000 of personal funds he loaned for his campaign in Ohio's 16th district. Miller also got $5,000 from Save America, Trump's leadership PAC. Now, listen to this. This is very interesting. Though Trump's committees had $102 million in the bank at the end of June, So far, he's done little to spread the wealth around. Save America, his leadership pack, has channeled $5,000 to some incumbent Republican senators he's endorsed, including John Boozman, Rand Paul, and Tim Scott. But some of the House candidates he's backing have yet to see any donations through the end of September. That includes Harriet Hageman, a Wyoming attorney who won Trump's endorsement to take on Cheney. Hageman raised $301,000, and Cheney has topped $1.5 million each quarter. So it's just it's very, very lopsided there. Herrera Butler raised $523,000. She topped the $450,000 raised by U.S. Army vet Joe Kent. That's closer for sure. And Upton, the voting to impeach Trump incumbent, raised $292,000, topping $115,000 for Steve Kara, who earned Trump's endorsement in September. This is interesting in a number of different ways. First of all, it would be great to just see them tear themselves apart. And as is pointed out in the article, and as we can sort of think about, these could be very weakening challenges, primary challenges to the incumbents. Every indication so far. So let's think through all of the different ways in which Trump and Trumpists have been wrong. They've been wrong that voting to impeach Trump in 2020 was going to destroy their chances in 2022. So far, they're doing fine. They're ahead. They're raising more money. They seem to be doing fine. So they were wrong about that. Trump saying you're out doesn't seem to have the power that Trump hoped that it would have. Number two, Trump handpicking a replacement also doesn't seem to be doing that much for the replacements. Now, arguably, these challengers might be doing even worse had they not been endorsed by Trump. We don't know. Number three, even Trump doesn't seem that motivated to actually help these people, at least not financially, as he has barely donated to any of these handpicked challengers so far. Now, maybe it's too early, although primaries are starting to come up for some of these folks. Maybe it's that Trump doesn't really believe that they're going to win, or it might be that this is just part of the grift. Trump's raising money supposedly to help put the right Republicans in. Trump always says we're going to get the rhinos out. The Republicans in name only are going to go out. But it may be that the real reason for fundraising is just the grift, collecting money, paying off campaign debts, all of the things that we talked about Trump doing back when he was raising money to fight election fraud, which, by the way, we're going to talk about tomorrow again. In some of these races, fundraising might matter less than in other parts of the country. Wyoming, for example, which is such a small population, it's less about having the most money to do advertising. I mean, the population is tiny. It's more about news narratives and personality stuff, and maybe endorsements even would make a difference. But in a lot of these races, whoever raises more money ends up winning. So we're going to follow these. But so far, Trump doesn't seem to have that golden touch. And also Trump saying, get them out of here. They are bad. We need to remove them. That also doesn't seem to be damaging a lot of these people. We'll see. Trump loves to claim his great record on endorsements. It's actually not so good. Speaking of Trump and trouble, Trump is scheduled to be deposed today. The backstory on this is that throughout his presidency, all sorts of complaints were made, legal complaints were made against Trump, many of them for sexual assault allegations. But the whole point of Trump's being president was, among other things, to say, oh, no, I'm too busy being president to actually be deposed, and the records need to be kept secret, executive privilege, all these different things. This may very quickly be changing. Donald Trump faces a pile of civil lawsuits as depositions begin. Listen to this. Trump is defending himself in at least 10 civil suits alleging fraud and defamation to incitement of violence. Former President Trump has been ordered to answer questions under oath in a lawsuit today, and his attorneys could set a date for a deposition in another case as well. The lawsuits involving allegations that his security guards roughed up protesters outside Trump Tower in New York, and allegations of defamation by former Apprentice contestant Summer Zervos, respectively, are just two cases in the mass of civil litigation Trump faces post-presidency. At least 10 civil cases are pending against Trump, whose ability to delay them has been curtailed since he left office in January. Trump has argued in some of the cases that as a sitting president, he was immune from civil lawsuits. His office didn't respond to a request for comment on the cases. Here's a rundown of the major civil suit, where the major civil suits stand. So you've got Summer Zervos. That's a name we've talked about before. She's been pushing for this for years, and hopefully now it's actually going to happen. Zervos was a contestant on season 5 of The Apprentice, says Trump smeared her by calling her a liar during his campaign in 2016 after she accused him of having subjected her to unwanted kissing and groping when she was seeking career advice in 2007. An attorney for Trump declined to comment. Trump's attorneys have said that his statements were true and they plan to file a counter suit. Protesters at Trump Tower. Also Monday, attorneys for protesters who alleged Trump's bodyguards assaulted them during a demonstration in 2015 were set to question Trump. Trump said in an affidavit in 2016, he doesn't know anything about it. He wasn't directly involved in hiring security. His attorneys tried to spare him from testifying for years, including when he was president. But the judge now said his testimony was indispensable. The videotape deposition was being conducted inside Trump Tower, where 6 protesters were demonstrating in September of 2015, and they would be used as testimony when the case goes to trial. You've also then got E. Jean Carroll suing Trump for defamation. That may require Trump to be deposed and give testimony. That was transferred to federal court last year after the Justice Department sought to intervene, saying, no, 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 Trump's immune because the statements are part of his official responsibilities. There's going to be arguments heard in December. There could be deposition dates set there. Business investors. I mean, this could be a decade for Donald Trump. Trump, his children, Eric, Don Jr. and Ivanka and his company are also being sued in the same courthouse by a group of people who say the family conned them into making bad investments in businesses the Trumps were promoting. That's another one that could lead to depositions. Mary Trump, Trump's niece, alleges the family defrauded her out of millions of dollars from her grandfather's estate and allegedly involving Donald Trump. So that one's going on. And then January 6th, Trump has been hit with at least 4 lawsuits by Democratic lawmakers and Capitol Police officers over the January 6th riots. Trump attorneys maintain he's immune. He was president at the time. The speech that allegedly incited the riot was protected by the First Amendment. We want cases dismissed and depositions have not yet been scheduled. There's also some voting rights related claims which could lead to depositions at some point in time. This is a crazy amount of stuff. Now, even if Trump successfully manages to beat off having to be deposed in the vast majority of these, this is an unconscionable amount of legal bills. Now, these are really legal bills which Donald Trump should have to pay personally. This is a topic where we've seen Matt Gaetz use campaign funds to cover legal expenses early on now in the possible upcoming charges against him. Would there really be consequences to Trump if he uses that grifted money supposedly raised to fight election fraud to pay for legal expenses? I don't know. I know you're not allowed to do it and it's against federal election law, but there have not exactly been repercussions to many members of Congress and various politicians for doing that, using donated funds for personal legal expenses. So I don't really know. It wouldn't shock me that Trump tries to do it. And it wouldn't shock me if Trump gets away with it, quite frankly. So we're going to continue monitoring that. And in the midst of all this, Donald Trump is now asking you to donate $45 to him to fight election fraud, which if you fall for it at this point, I mean, you're really disconnected from reality. But we'll talk about that a little bit tomorrow. We'll take a quick break. After the break, we're going to talk about Ted Cruz's latest statements about the Australian COVID guidelines, which by and large have worked very well. We're going to talk about the resurrection, not the wrong term, right? The resurrection of the war on Christmas. And we've got much more upcoming after this short break. All right, let's look at the latest, just completely boneheaded attempt by Republican Senator Ted Cruz to espouse his ideology of open everything, never close anything, asking people to think about someone else in their community or on this planet is a form of liberal nonsense and blah, 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 blah. And as a result, Ted Cruz has ended up getting called out very brutally by Michael Gunner, who's the chief minister for the Northern Territory of Australia. So the context of all of this are protests in Australia by anti-maskers and anti-guidelines people in the context of an Australia that has really taken the pandemic very seriously. And so let's first start with Ted Cruz's tweet, which was in response to a video from Michael Gunner from a press conference, which we will look at. OK, so Ted Cruz tweets, quote, "I love the Aussies. Their history of rugged independence is legendary. I've always said Australia is the Texas of the Pacific." Oh, God. "The COVID tyranny of their current government is disgraceful and sad. Individual liberty matters. I stand with the people of Australia." So the clip being referred to from the day before is a clip related to guidelines being put in place, potentially fines for violating mandates, etc. This is Michael Gunner, the as I mentioned, the chief minister for the Northern Territory. Let's take a listen. This is what triggered Ted Cruz.
"Ask yourself these three questions. In my work, do I come into contact with vulnerable people? Is my workplace at a higher risk of infection? Do I work on infrastructure or logistics that are critical to the territory?"
Right.
If your answer is maybe, or I don't know, you need to get the jab. Critically, the direction also applies to industries who directly face customers in circumstances where the worker may not know the vulnerability of the person they are interacting with.
Right.
So it is simple. If your job includes interacting with members of the public, then you need to get the jab. If you work in hospitality, you need to get the jab. If you work in retail or in a supermarket, you need to get the jab. If you are behind the counter at the bank, if you're a receptionist or positions like that, you need to get the jab. If you are a barber, a hairdresser, a beauty therapist, you need to get the jab. All these workers and many, many more directly interact with members of the public.
Yeah.
That means you are frontline workers in our economy. That means you must be vaccinated. Of course, there can be exemptions, but these are extremely narrow and must be backed up with medical evidence. Simply not wanting the vaccine is not a reason. Today, we're also announcing the date from which this mandate comes into effect.
This is huge.
From Saturday, the 13th of November, if you have not received at least your first dose of a vaccine, you will not be permitted to attend your workplace in that role, and a failure to comply with the direction is a $5,000 fine. That means that workers must have received at least their first dose by Friday, the 12th of November, at the latest.
Okay. So that's what triggered
Ted
Cruz to such a degree. And this led to Michael Gunner to actually respond to Ted Cruz specifically. And this guy really does not mess around. The response from Michael Gunner, the chief minister for the Northern Territories of Australia, is, "Hey, Ted Cruz, g'day from the Northern Territory in Australia. Here are some facts. Nearly 70,000 Texans have tragically died from COVID. There have been zero deaths in the territory. Did you know that? Vaccination is so important here because we have vulnerable communities and the oldest continuous living culture on the planet to protect. Did you know that? We've done whatever it takes to protect the territory. That's kept us safe and free. We've been in lockdown for just 8 days in 18 months. Our businesses and schools are all open. Did you know that? We don't need your lectures. Thanks, mate. You know nothing about us. And if you stand against a life-saving vaccine, then you sure as hell don't stand with Australia. I love Texas. Go Longhorns. But when it comes to COVID, I'm glad that we are nothing like you." Ted Cruz just humiliates himself day after day after day. And one of the really interesting aspects of this is that there's the stereotype of all sorts of different populations, which sometimes Republicans don't like, you know, all the typical stuff. Highly educated is sort of feminine, and European is sort of feminine. And actually, the trend there seems to be a lot of stuff is just sissy, right? According to Republicans. Then they have stereotypes about the opposite, about those that are rugged and they're sort of like them. They're conservatives and out on. So they talk about, hey, you know, in Switzerland, lots of people have guns. They're manly there and they're fine. You go and talk to the folks who own the guns in Switzerland and you realize, wow, they actually, from a legal perspective, are really in line with Democrats. And they explain that the role of guns in Switzerland is actually completely different to that in the United States. They don't understand United States gun culture, but Republicans go, oh, look at Switzerland. Similarly, with the Australian rugged individualism and all this stuff, a lot of the culture in Australia is just different. It's not guns in the same way that there are guns in the United States. It's not out on the land in the same way that, you know, some of these folks in Wyoming and Montana are wrapping it up with certain political views. That's not Australia. It's actually not it at all. And Ted Cruz just embarrassed and humiliated once again here. Shouldn't come as a surprise, but maybe he'll go back to Cancun to get away from the negative repercussions of this one as well. We sort of haven't talked in a way about the war on Christmas, which doesn't exist, for a while, because there was a Republican in office. So let me refresh your memory as to how the war on Christmas works. It doesn't actually exist, but now there's a Democrat in office. So Fox News wants to fully resurrect the war on Christmas. When a Republican is in office as president, the story is Democrats want to wage the war on Christmas. But thankfully, we've got a Republican president, so they're not going to succeed. That's the story when a Republican president is in office. When there's a Democratic president in office, the story is the full war on Christmas routine. The left wants to cancel Christmas. They want it to be illegal to say Christmas. They want it to be illegal to be Christian. They don't want gifts. They don't want anything. Okay. This year, the war on Christmas under a Democratic president is combining with the possibility of supply chain issues delaying Christmas gifts. And so Dr. Fauci is being taken out of context when he was asked last week or the week before about large Christmas gatherings. It's all being ramped up and kind of rolled together. Now, here's a little compilation we will play. This is from the recount. Very nicely done.
The supply chain crunch that threatens to spoil the holiday season. There will be things that people can't get.
Toys not getting shipped.
Toys like Tonka trucks.
Tonka trucks.
Oh, Tonka trucks.
Yeah.
My Little Pony, Care Bears.
This is the type of things that make or break a Christmas.
Lincoln Logs.
Care Bears.
Tonka trucks. My Little Pony.
We've showed you the kind of trek from the Care Bear in a factory in China to the store in Massachusetts.
Well, this is the togetherness Care Bear, and everybody needs to be together, and everybody needs a hug. They're going to be harder to find.
If people can't get bacon and people can't get a Tonka toy, that would be Joe Biden's
office. Yeah, that would just be terrible for Joe Biden. So then the House Republicans tweeted a picture of Joe Biden with the caption, quote, "This is the guys who is trying to steal Christmas. Americans are not going to let that happen." And I know it shouldn't be, but it's still shocking to me that people continue to fall for this stuff. A headline while Peter Ducey was reporting from the White House read, "Toy Association CEO says it may be too late to save Christmas." Then at another moment when Peter Ducey was reporting, it said, "White House scrambles as supply crisis threatens Christmas." Neil Cavuto had an explosive story with an interview even called "Christmas Tree Sellers Hit by Supply Chain Delays." And then on the opinion shows, I know, right? On the opinion shows, Laura Ingraham had a story called "The Biden Who Stole Christmas." Sean Hannity then ran an almost identical story called "The Grinch Who Stole Christmas." But there's a picture of Joe Biden in a green suit and tie. Yesterday morning, there was a segment on Unfiltered with Dan Bongino. That might be a Fox News Online show. Maybe it's an actual TV show on the weekends. I don't know. The segment was called "How the Biden Administration is Stealing Christmas." Aaron Rupar reported on Thursday last week that Fox News mentioned Christmas at least 106 times in the prior 24 hours. This is sort of like the epitome of the cultural replacing the substantive for the American right wing. We've talked about it before. This particular story, the whole war on Christmas thing, goes back to Bill O'Reilly and some of those types in the early 2000s. They started this in the way that it exists now. They started it in the early 2000s saying Christmas is being banned, saying Merry Christmas is being banned. It's an attack on Christianity. They're trying to diminish Christianity, etc. The real genesis of this story is that there were some companies that decided to be marginally more inclusive by saying, hey, you know what? Let's say happy holidays. That's basically the story. And everybody was fine and life continued and it was no big deal. But that was what started what is now known as the war on Christmas. And now just perfectly supply chain issues melding with it. Dr. Fauci's comments about Christmas, which, by the way, we'll follow up on today's bonus show. He's saying if you're vaccinated, it's probably fine to gather, actually. That blended into it. And now Fox News is utterly determined to resurrect this war on Christmas. Incredible. But they're succeeding. This is the type of stuff that does well. It gets ratings. It gets people angry. The same way we've got to stop socialism. Really? What is socialism? Oh, it's Biden. What? Yeah, it works. It works. And they have no policy. And that's why they're doing it. And you're already seeing war on Christmas stuff show up. It was early October when it started. It's already there. And now it's building in all the usual online enclaves. We have a voicemail number, and that number is 2192-DAVID-P. This is a tough voicemail I'm going to play for you guys today. This voicemail is a combination of someone who doesn't know what's going on politically, but also doesn't understand my show. They claim to understand my show, but you're going to notice in this segment, they say, you're doing white supremacy on your show, David. You're doing white supremacy. You're doing xenophobia. You did a segment about how Haitians have AIDS, seemingly misunderstanding that my segment was about Donald Trump's claim that Haitian immigrants are just bringing AIDS over. That wasn't me saying it. I reported on it. And you'll notice that this is someone who has this is endemic in the United States. Many opinions based on things they misunderstood or misheard.
So this is in regards to debate about vaccines. First foremost, like, who are you? I mean, I see a young guy going with...
Thank you.
Trying to make money on the basis of being white. You just seem to go with constant objection.
On being white or being liked? I'm Hispanic. I don't even know what he's talking about. But again, you don't have to watch me. This is people don't seem to understand. Just because a show exists doesn't mean you have to send in every opinion you have about it or even watch it.
Opinion without adding any critical thought. Like, I'm trying to figure out if it's all I see is all of these attempts to get relevancy, 43K views, 24K views, racist crap like Haitian migrants have AIDS because obviously you're racist.
Did you guys hear that? He says that my clip about Haitian migrants having AIDS was me doing a racist segment. Trump said it. I'm reporting on it. By the way, in terms of average views, our average video now gets 75,000, often, you know, 200,000, 300,000. The channel's actually blown up. But it doesn't matter. Does this person care?
I mean, it's just so funny because people like you actually contribute absolutely nothing to our generation.
This guy's contributing a lot, though.
You know, I don't think you'll do too well in the long term.
I love that. That's the best. I love it when people who have no idea what I'm doing say, there's no way this could possibly last. And it's like, well, we've been doing it for 16 years. And last month, we were the biggest that we had ever been. This is the circling the drain meme. Two of my favorite memes. You're circling the drain. Every one of your platforms is dying. Fact check, we're bigger than ever. The other one that I love. The unsubscribe trolls, people who say I'm now unsubscribing because of something you said, and they were often never subscribed to begin with, or they're not really unsubscribing. Okay, that's a departure.
You're not anyone who really brings any worth to society, except for trying to get people excited and trying to misinform the general public. So I guess that's really basically the argument is that, I mean, what's the point of having a discussion with someone who is so irrelevant and untalented
What I love about that is no one's forcing him to have a discussion with me. He didn't even have to call in.
From birth, they need to constantly just try and enforce some objective opinion.
What does objective opinion even mean? Isn't opinion by its very nature subjective?
That doesn't even come from your own. You know, this is a bunch of, racist KKK stuff on your page.
Yeah, there it is. So I'm doing, my channel's a KKK channel. So that is just a really stunning combination of someone who doesn't even understand my views, is angry that the show exists, claims it's ending soon, doesn't want to engage with it, but is choosing to engage with it on the basis of things that they misunderstood or misread. You really can't fix this stuff. I don't know how we deal with that, folks. I really don't. We will talk on today's bonus show. High schoolers are training to drive 18-wheelers because of a shortage of truck drivers. High schoolers. We will also talk about Dr. Fauci saying, hey, you know what? If your family's vaccinated, you can get together for Christmas. After being misquoted, he's now actually saying that's okay to do. And lastly, there is a wild situation developing with Chicago police officers between the mayor and the union over the vaccine mandate. We are going to talk about what is happening. It's getting very, very ugly with Chicago police. All of those stories and more on today's bonus show. Sign up at joinpacman.com to get instant access.
WRCT Pittsburgh. We love monkeys.
This is Satan. You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
Hello, my fellow Americans. I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Yeah! Well, this is Kimon Amali, and you're listening to WRCT-FM. Keep it locked, Rust.
Hey, this is Jim from Rusted Root, and you're listening to WRCT 88.3 in Pittsburgh. Yeah.
WRCT, the inside from way out.
You're tuned to WRCT Pittsburgh's
automation. WRCT Pittsburgh. Automation is the key. I am Dr. Jazz P.
Well, this is Ziggy Marley, and you're listening to WRCT in Pittsburgh. You know, go Steelers.
Hey, this is Ben Foles, and you're listening to WRCT. It's 2 for Tuesday, 3 for Thursday, Ladies Night Wet T-Shirt Contest on 88.3 FM, biatch.
Thank you.
We own and your soul. Soul is next.
We don't actually have the legal documentation to back that up.
Soon, pay toilets will take over the world, and everyone, everywhere will listen to WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
WRCT, this is the place that sets the pace for Pittsburgh.
WRCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1940.
Senator John McCain, and I'm from Arizona. But when I'm in Pittsburgh, I always listen to WRCT, one of the finest stations in all of radio. And Carnegie Mellon University is one of the finest academic institutions in our country. Be sure at your next election to vote early and vote often.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Every statement I make today is backed up by sources, solid sources. These are not assertions. What we're giving you are facts and conclusions based on solid intelligence.
General Colin Powell has died at the age of 84. We'll look at his life and legacy, including his role in paving the way for the U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003, to helping shape U.S. military policy in Panama, El Salvador, and Nicaragua during the 1980s. Then, a Democracy Now! Exclusive. We speak with Jean Montreville, a prominent Haitian-American immigrant rights activist who was deported to Haiti in 2018. In a remarkable development, he was allowed to fly back to New York Monday after receiving a 90-day special parole.
This has been my whole fighting to be with my kids. And I've always wanted to be with my kids. And now I get a second chance to be with them again.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Former President Donald Trump's filed a lawsuit to stop the Congressional Committee investigating the Capitol insurrection from receiving records about the January 6th riot, as well as Trump's efforts to overturn the will of voters in the November election. Trump's legal team claims the request undermines Trump's executive privilege and is asking for more time to review records requests. This comes as the January 6th committee has laid out its contempt case against former Trump White House strategist Stephen Bannon, who defied a congressional subpoena claiming executive privilege. The committee is expected to vote today to refer Bannon for criminal charges. Meanwhile, Donald Trump gave several hours of videotaped testimony Monday in a deposition ordered by a New York judge. The civil case was brought by six plaintiffs of Mexican descent who say Trump's security guards assaulted them outside Trump Tower in 2015 as they peacefully protested Trump's racist comments about Mexicans. Their lawyer said Monday Trump personally authorized the violence.
We believe there is ample evidence to demonstrate that before and after the incident at issue, the Trump Organization, the Trump campaign, and Donald J. Trump himself authorized and condoned violent acts in violation of individual rights.
A Food and Drug Administration panel has recommended third booster shots of Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine for people 65 and older and people at high risk of severe disease or workplace exposure. The FDA is also expected this week to allow U.S. residents to mix and match different COVID-19 vaccines. Colin Powell's family says the former top U.S. general and secretary of state had a form of blood cancer that left him vulnerable to infection before his death from COVID-19 complications Monday at the age of 84. Although Powell was fully vaccinated against COVID-19, he was struggling with both Parkinson's disease and multiple myeloma, which left him severely immunocompromised. On Monday, President Biden ordered flags at the White House to be flown at half staff in Powell's honor through Friday. And top administration officials were effusive in their praise of Powell. This is Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, Vice President Kamala Harris, but first Secretary of State Tony Blinken.
Today, a grateful nation observes the end of a distinguished career and celebrates 35 years of service and victory.
The world lost one of the greatest leaders that we have ever witnessed.
You know, what an incredible American.
As chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Powell was the architect of the U.S. invasion of Panama in 1989 and oversaw the U.S.-led war on Iraq in 1991. As Secretary of State under George W. Bush, Powell gave false testimony to the U.N. Security Council in 2003 about non-existent weapons of